Hey, this is John. Thanks for checking in for this episode of the Mobile Radio Carnival. Today you get to listen into my conversation with jazz composer, drummer, and musician extraordinaire Michael Salenza of Catatonic fame. Enjoy. Hey, man. How are you, dude?
Good.
Fantastic, man. So you ready to rock this thing?
Yep. Ready when you are.
All right. So typically what I do is I just have the guest introduce themselves. The show is the Mobile Radio Carnival, which I take care of that part, which I already did, man, because we're rolling and we're talking. So who the hell are you? You got to tell people who the hell you are, buddy.
I'm Michael Salenza. I hail from Niagara Falls, New York.
Nice. Yeah. And he won't say this because he has a degree of humility. He's an amazing musician and he's an amazing drummer.
Thank you, John.
Of course, man.
Been playing drums for over 50 years now.
Well, that leads me right into my first question. When did you start playing music? What inspired you to play music? And what in particular inspired you to play jazz music?
Well, I'll tell you what, my mom had a lot to do with me playing the drums. Because when I was about 10 or 11, she took my cousin and I to a stadium in Buffalo, New York to see Chicago, that band.
Oh, wow.
Chicago.
Yeah.
So I'd been playing piano for 5 or 6 years. That was her. She wanted me to play piano. So I kind of started on piano. And when I saw that drummer from Chicago, game over.
Yeah. Well, also the thing about Chicago that's interesting now that you say that is because it was rock, but it was also jazz infused.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So your mom gave you a bit of a jazz bent out of the gate, it sounds like.
She did. It kind of backfired on her because when I told her I wanted to play drums, she said, no way. She goes, if you want to play drums, you got to buy them yourself.
Yeah. And then you did, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's hysterical. Was your mom like a hippie chick at the time or something? Is that why she dug Chicago?
I wouldn't say she was a hippie chick, but I would say she was a florist, so she was kind of an artist too.
That's very, very cool. So when did you switch over to drums? Kind of immediately after that, huh?
Pretty much, man. Yeah, and you know, she wasn't happy about it, but I started taking lessons on the practice pad.
Yeah.
You know, then I got a snare drum. Back in those days, you didn't really get a drum till you did some pad work.
Yeah. That's how I started. Even though I never made it past that, I never made it. I'm like, this is dumb. I'm hitting a freaking pad, man. So you prevailed, man. I couldn't do it.
Nobody wants to do the boring stuff.
Yeah, it's like two, 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 two. It's like I just want to, you know. It's well, I got to be honest. On the piano, I did the same thing. I would just decide that it was time to create something. It didn't have to make sense, and it used to drive my mom nuts.
Right.
Hey, Mom, I got a song for you. And I would just rattle the keys and it didn't make a damn bit of sense. But but you figured out how to make it make sense, man. So you also ended up, you instruct music as well. So you've taken it quite serious.
Yeah, about over 25 years teaching experience. 20 years at Loyola High School, you know, on Venice Boulevard here in L.A. Where, you know, I'm the band director, the jazz band director. I started an orchestra. I teach the band class and the piano class as well.
Yeah. And that's very cool. And so you definitely did switch, though, from a Chicago-style rock into jazz.
Yeah. You know, I had a really cool teacher. His name was Tom. He was from Niagara Falls, too. And he turned me on to, like, people like Tony Williams and Miles Davis. And plus my dad listened to Miles and listened to jazz. So, you know, I didn't really like it at that point. You know, when I was listening to Chicago, I didn't really have a taste for it then. Yeah. I was listening to more like prog rock, like Yes and Genesis and Gentle Giant. And, you know, my dad was playing jazz, but I didn't really like it at that time. I think when I was 16 or 17, maybe, I started listening to Jeff Beck, and that was kind of the gateway from Chicago to Jeff Beck to Tony Williams and Alan Holdsworth, I didn't really like bebop back then. It was more like Joe Satriani.
Yeah.
Now that's kind of style of jazz fusion.
That's what I was going to say. When you're talking, I can kind of see the development because you do a kind of a progressive jazz. You do very kind of standardized jazz as well. You have a really rich mix of catalog. And actually, if I could, I'd like to play one of your songs right now so people know a little bit what we're talking about. I'd like to put on, I believe it's called Heartbeats.
Okay.
And I like it because it's very interesting to me. I think it's the only thing I've ever heard that has like a female vocalist on that you've done.
Yeah, before Catatonic, I with Mike Tolan, you know Mike, we produced this record called 13 Tunes, but then I added one after he left, and they were all kind of like vocal tunes.
Yeah. I remember you working on them when I was at the Dresden. We'll get into the Dresden too, but I remember that you were working on these jazz songs with vocalists and things like that. And this is one of those songs, correct?
Yes.
All right. Well, we're going to put it on and let the audience kind of begin the experience with you.
Sure.
Thank you.
And so for me, that is unique because you do have a female vocalist in that. And so, like, why was, do you often work with female vocalists?
Well, not all the tunes are female. You know, Mike sang on some of them. I sang on one or two of them. But the female vocalist, we went to the University of Miami together, and she lives here in L.A. She works, she's the jazz vocal director at Long Beach, UC Long Beach.
Right.
Yeah, her name, you can look her up. Her name is Christine Helfrich, and she sang on Heartbeats and a couple other ones, too.
So she spent some time figuring it out as well as, like you, she's gone on a path where she instructs it. I gotta believe.
She's a learned singer who can sight read, and she's been trained to sing jazz, and she's pretty cool.
I think it's kind of interesting to me because some of the best musicians that I've personally been around do tend to instruct as well. In fact, I did a podcast with Rob, one of the guitar players that has played with you and currently does with Cantatonic, and he's an instructor as well. So I find it interesting. I knew that when you worked at the Dresden, we had talked about it and you were like, yeah, I teach. And I, for a while, I think you were teaching just strictly percussion. So you teach people how to play the kettle drums and things like that.
I kind of started out that way as an instructor, just on percussion, but
yeah,
on the high school level, you got to be able to do all the instruments, you know, winds, brass, strings is probably my weakest, but yeah, you know, you got to be prepared on the high school level to do a little bit more.
Well, I think I remember busting your chops a little bit because it's like that seemed to me at the time like the most fun job because you're crashing things, you know what I mean? And you're crashing things with young people that like to crash things as well. So,
oh yeah, you know, I direct the drum line too, and that's a lot of fun. But you know, when you're doing percussion, like orchestral percussion, you got to know how to read three different clefs.
Right.
Right. So it's a lot more involved than a lot of people think. You got a treble clef. You got to read xylophone on treble, timpani on bass, and then all the auxiliary stuff's on a neutral clef.
Yeah.
Without pitch, but you know, it's pretty involved.
How does it? I barely manage. I played a little bass for a while and was somewhat proficient at it. And I can do like chorded things on any keyboard. I can probably still do that. How does someone do that? How does someone like, okay, I play drums, I play little keyboards. Now, as I'm studying, I know I'm going to teach people, so I have to now learn how to play a clarinet or a saxophone. So now you're learning a whole different set of technique. You just sit in the room and you just naturally had a bent for it, or did you really have to struggle with it? How does that work?
Well, you know, if you're teaching a beginner on a wind instrument, you have to be able to know, like, say, for clarinet, like you said, you have to know how to mount a reed and teach the student to, you know, put the saliva on it, and it's kind
right.
of all that. You got to teach them how to hold it, where to put their fingers. You got to teach them how to make a sound out of the mouthpiece. And once you could teach them the basics of that,
yeah,
you know, they start to learn the treble clef. There's really good textbooks out there that show the students where to put their fingers to play C. You know, I don't even have to really know how to play clarinet to instruct a beginner. You just teach them how to make a sound, and, you know, they're off to the races.
Right.
They memorize the finger chart. And, you know, I teach the band class where there's not only clarinet, it's flute, saxophones, trumpets, trombones, French horns, you know, and then percussion too, tubas, baritones, you know. You got to know the basics of it to get somebody started.
And then that is that separate? That'd be separate from choral, I assume.
Oh, choral's something totally different.
Because voice is just a whole different thing, I would imagine.
Voice is a whole other animal. I'm mostly all instrumental at Loyola.
I gotcha. So you shift over to jazz, to your mom's disdain a little bit, only because you're crashing drums now. Was it a basement or a garage in your case?
Oh, we had basements in Niagara Falls, brother.
That's what we had in Michigan too, man. So you know about the cold weather. You know about all the same stuff, you know, from Detroit. I know from Detroit, rather. So you shift over into jazz, it sounds like in your early 20s, and then you obviously would be able to play rock and roll. Have you played in rock bands in the LA area?
Not too much in LA, but when I was studying in Florida, I was in a rock band called Alternative Blue. You know, I was with a Christian rock band for 5 or 6 years called the Second Chapter of Acts. They were like the Kansas of Christian music.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So there was a bit of progressive vibe even in that then.
Yeah, totally. It was really a cool band to be in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I bump into guys that like it'd be so interesting to me if you played heavy metal for a couple of years and then switched over to jazz. You know what I'm saying?
No, I never developed a taste for metal.
Yeah.
Like as a player, but when I listened to it, I could really hear the that it's very deep, you know, with rhythm, and there's modal harmony and dissonance, and you have to have a lot of dexterity as a drummer to be able to play that music. So I really respect it, you know.
A lot of the more developed musicians I know claim that it's almost more like classical music in some ways because of what you just talked about, that the techniques are pretty advanced. I mean, I imagine when it emerged back in the day, it wasn't quite so sophisticated, but guys take it and make it better and better and better. And it's interesting to hear you describe it that way, because I hear a lot of really good musicians describe it that way.
Yeah, when you actually break it down and try to analyze it, they have odd time signatures. Like I said before, like, you know, modal jazz chords.
Yeah.
It's pretty deep.
Yeah, definitely so. So you end up in the jazz realm, and then where in LA does that allow you to play? I got to see you recently at the Baked Potato, which is a jazz club or den. So I know that you play there. I also know you played at the Dresden because I managed it at the time, and that was I wouldn't say that was a jazz house, but Marty and Elaine were there and had somewhat of a reputation in the jazz world. Where else in LA can you go out and play?
You know, we played at Vitello's.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Play there. There was a place in Pasadena called The Mix. We worked there. Mm-hmm. Personally, I've played at Columbo's in Eagle Rock. There's another place that has jazz once in a while called The York, also in Eagle Rock. You know, there's the one on Sunset that's really popular. I'm not sure if it's still open. I can't remember the name of it, but the Baked Potato is one of the few places left. You know, there's not that many places. The Catatonic is like really honored. We have a really small residency, like 4 times a year, like once every 3 months, we get to play there once a quarter. And, you know, as a full-time instructor, you know, that's almost enough for a guy like me.
Well, yeah. The truth is, it has, you and I have talked about it in the past, or you know, or maybe it was even Rob that was talking about it with me, was the idea of the history that's at that place too.
Exactly. Since 1970.
Right. It was created by what's the guy's, the guy who owns the place still, right? The guy from the Wrecking Crew.
Exactly. Don Randy.
Don, yes, sir. The keyboard player. Him and Leon did a lot of stuff.
His son, Justin, now runs the place.
Oh, okay. I mean, it was a great time for us to see you guys play there. It's the first time I'd ever been there. But you were saying?
Yeah, his son, Justin, kind of books the bands now. And, you know, back in the 1980s when I first moved to L.A., my roommate was Bobby Economo. He played drums for Lola Falana and a few other bands like that, and big bands. And he was Don Randy's, he was the house drummer at the Baked Potato in the early 80s. And so I used to kind of help him with his drums. I was only 19 years old. I would help him, you know, take the drums into the back door of the Baked Potato. And then I would stay, and I never had to pay. I was young. I didn't have much money at the time. But
you got roadie doorman, pay.
Yeah, the doorman would kind of give me a stink eye, like, who's this young punk? Like,
yeah.
never pays to get in. And it's funny, that same guy, his name is Bobby Jones, was the guy who he had lunch recently with Justin Randy, and he told him about Catatonic. He was the guy that got us in there, you know, to make a long story short.
That's very cool, man. Yeah. So he met you a long time ago, and he still ended up wrangling you into the spot, man. That's cool.
Yeah, right? That was, you know, how many years ago? Like 40 years ago?
That is cool. It's a cool little venue. When we went in, you know, you guys, you know, it was a nice volume. It wasn't too much, and it's a kind of a smaller space, very intimate, which I enjoyed. My wife really enjoyed you guys as well, in part because I think you guys, your band, is just so well crafted. At least that was my take on it, as well as hers. So maybe we should. I think Kelly Green is a song. Did you record that at the Baked Potato?
You know, I think that was recorded at Vitello's.
Oh, interesting, because I could tell it was a club. I think I'd like to put that on so people know a little bit more, get a little more of what we're talking about, and we'll come out of that and talk about your jazz style a little bit, if you're cool with that.
Yeah, totally.
All right. Yeah, so that is now who is playing on that? That's a wonderful piece of music.
You know, the on Kelly Green, that was kind of the original Catatonic band.
Yeah.
That still had Rob Garland on guitar and myself were the
And Ben on keys?
Ben, no.
Interesting.
I'd have to listen to it. It might be a quartet recording.
Interesting.
We were a quartet before Ben, but we had a guy named Jeff Snow who played flute and sax.
Yeah.
He had an alto flute and he had a collection of horns. So we don't have him anymore, but he was in the band before Andy, who's Andy Francis is now our horn player.
Gotcha. So is that, would you consider that standard jazz or something that slips into something a little bit different?
Well, I would say the fact that it's a bossa nova is kind of standard-y.
Yeah.
My harmony slips in and out of different keys, and I use really cool different type of modal jazz chords, and that's what makes it maybe not traditional.
Yeah. But it's not dramatically out of the loop. It just has I would always confuse what you're doing a little bit into progressive jazz.
You could maybe call it that, but
yeah.
The fact that it has a bossa nova beat, maybe it's more laid back because of that.
It's interesting too that so that was kind of what you're saying is that was kind of the first incarnation of what is now Catatonic.
Yes.
Because you know, I knew that was Rob on guitar. He's a pretty distinctive guitar player.
Yes.
And the rest of it, like I say, it's all jazz, but I used to go in Detroit. There was a band called Orange Lake Drive. I think they had like 12 players and they would do progressive jazz. So I love progressive jazz and I love anything that drifts into it. And I think when I saw you guys, I was a little surprised that it felt a little more like that. It was very intriguing because it felt standard at some level, but it's still just curved into some interesting things. And I think with Kelly Green, it did that as well. Is that intentional or is that just when you write and you put it together, is it just what happens?
I think everything that you said is true. You know, I basically write the song and I want to work with guys who come up with their own parts, you know, based on just a couple adjectives like bossa nova and, you know, the tempo, things like that. You know, I don't ever tell guys what to play, but I just kind of give them a ballpark.
Don't you also, can't you also at some point to know how to speak to like a keyboard player that you've used for a while, you know what they're, you know how they kind of play and you know that, you know what they like to do with stuff. So you develop like a shorthand when you talk to your players, your fellow players?
You know, that's what chord symbols are all about. That's like the coolest shorthand I know. You just pop up a chord symbol and a guy like Ben, you know, he knows exactly what to do.
Yeah.
Rob,
and you know,
too.
You can anticipate it and you, yeah, that's the vibe I got that it was a playful improvisation in some ways, you know, obviously you have the tightness of the structure.
Right.
It feels like you're given, you know, everyone's kind of taking their time to play what they're feeling, what they're experiencing as a group.
Exactly.
Which gives
you know,
it, yeah.
Basically that's what a lead sheet is. You look at the melody line and you see the chord symbols, and there could be an improv section that's different. Sometimes the improv section is over the chords of the song.
Yeah.
So you know, that's what a lead sheet is, and that's pretty much how we operate as a band.
And so I think I was asking you about how you rehearse that, because some of the vibe you create is I would think is very complex, just in theory. Because you do have a lot of drama in the songs. There's changes and there's it's not necessarily always tempo changes, but there you obviously create a freedom for there to be changes. I assume those are somewhat planned.
Yes, because, you know, when you look at the lead sheet, there's the A section, the B section, possibly a C part. I think Ben's the only guy that goes beyond C. You know, my tunes mostly have A, B, and C.
Right.
Sometimes only A and B.
So in a standard song, that would be intro, verse, chorus.
Well, you don't bridge. Count the intro as like a section. That's just gotcha. Like a separate part. A lot of my tunes, they have intros and endings, but you don't really include that in
the count, in the way you set up.
Yeah, in the way you set up the different sections, you know.
So it'd be more like a verse, chorus, bridge.
Yeah.
And then they'd be thrown around in a less traditional way than conventional music.
Exactly. Like the A part would be the verse, B would be chorus, C would be bridge or solo section.
Right. That's an amazing like free flow thing, and that's what they with jazz. I mean, I got to sing with Martin Lane a bit, and for me it was weird because I was used to a rock format where, you know, the percussion is set basically by the drummer, the timing is set in rehearsal and all of that. And then when the first time I sang with Marty and Elaine, I was thinking, hey, this isn't going too bad, but what's going on? I they were like waiting for me and I was waiting for them because I didn't understand that interplay that you guys do with jazz.
What's interesting about some types of jazz is the bass player is more the dominant timekeeper than the drummer.
Right.
Especially with bebop and those types of things. So the bass player is more of a constant. The drummer is constantly improvising in between, you know?
Well, it's interesting, too, because especially with Marty, I think that it felt like, I don't know drumming terms per se, but I agree, like the bass and the drum would drive it, but then he would do like these flourishes that were more part of the song than a flourish. And I notice with your drum work, you're like more, I mean, you know how to do when it's time for you to do a break and do your thing, you certainly step up. But in a way, yours is more, it has more of a percussive vibe to it, if this makes sense. It's more driven usually, or it's more purposeful, if this makes sense.
Yeah, I think. You know, when I improvise, I try to relate it to parts of the piece, like the melody or the bass rhythm, and I try to jive it in with that so it doesn't stick out, you know, and I try to keep the groove while I'm doing that.
Right. Yeah, it definitely is like, well, your guys, your music, your guys... That's an old Detroit thing. I don't know if that's where you come from. Your guys, anyway.
Use guys.
Use guys is West or East Coast, rather. but when you guys play it together, it's such an interesting like push and pull. Like when, you know, it's cool to see you guys play too, because it feels like sometimes, you know, your musicians are showing off for each other while they're playing the song, just in the pocket type of thing. And it's like, oh, Rob's doing a whole variant there. You can tell because the way, you know, Ben's looking at him, and now Ben's going to one up him is the way I felt the night I saw it was going on, which is super cool.
You know, I try not to look at it that way as far as like competing against each other.
Yeah.
But I think in any band, there's always, you know, everybody has to flow together, whether it's rock or jazz. And
yeah,
you kind of try to stay out of each other's way. But when it all comes together, it all kind of locks in.
Yeah. No, that makes sense, because I did feel this great sense of like when someone isn't shining, they're there to pull the song, you know, collectively through. I definitely felt that vibe. Out of venues, which is the Baked Potato your favorite venue to play?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where else. We've tried to get in a few other places. It's tough when you don't know somebody.
Yeah.
You know somebody, it's like, bam. We only got in there because of the doorman.
That's funny.
Catatonic's only about maybe 7 or 8 years old in L.A., but for us to be playing at the Baked Potato on a regular basis, it's kind of a feather in our caps.
Yeah, it is super cool.
We get to come back and play on a regular basis.
And then so what was it, Vitello's? That was a pretty nice room.
Yeah.
Did you find it so?
Yeah, it was a great room. It had a nice sound system with a came with an engineer, and their contract was really, I hate to say it, but it was really not in favor of the musician.
Right.
So, you know, the baked potato, they take care of the musicians there.
That's great. Plus, you get a huge potato if you want it.
If you want one, yeah.
If you think you can finish the damn thing off.
Before you play, I'd be wanting to take a nap after that.
My wife ordered one, and she's like, hey, what do you want on it? Like, honey, I had dinner. I don't know what you're thinking. And then they brought it out. And I don't know. They're like 14 inches long. They're the biggest damn potato I've ever seen.
I know. You're crazy big.
Yeah. So that's cool. So when you played the Dresden, you were in a different Cats band, though. You were in the Michael Tolan band.
Yeah, Mike knew you and knew the Ferraros too. You know who went to Loyola High School.
That was
a strange connection.
Yeah.
But yeah, Johnny or Jimmy, right? Jimmy.
And, yeah.
What's his brother's name too? He went there.
Oh, yeah. I forget his brother's name. His brother passed away and I never really.
But we were there on Sunday nights for a little over a year.
Yeah.
And it was pretty cool to play there on Sunday.
Yeah, I really like the venue. It's new. It's newer now after COVID. Mark kind of took it over and, he's creating a whole new thing. So, you know, fingers crossed, maybe I can persuade him to get you guys in there. That would be fun.
Yeah, I think Catatonic would enjoy that. Yeah.
I think that your vibe is correct for the room. I think I just have to introduce him to your vibe.
You know, we never got a chance to play on Marty and Elaine's stage. We always had to set up in the corner.
Yeah.
So maybe as Catatonic, I don't want to shake any leaves or anything, but maybe we'll get to play in the center of the room.
That would be super cool. I played there with my band, the Electric Shamans.
Okay.
And we did originals and we did blues rock and
did you get to play in the center of the room?
No, brother. I was in the corner too, which is a little strange because you're like,
are the bands that play there now, do they get to play in the middle or?
Yeah, they do.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
If we did get a gig there, we get to play in the middle of the
Yeah. Room. I think Sunday night still might be over in the corner. I'm not sure. I've only been up a couple times. I'm ashamed to say I really should get out a little more, but COVID kind of turned me into a bit of a toad.
No, I get that.
Yeah. But so yeah, that corner shot was weird because you're like, okay, your one big table, a small table, and then the backed tables. So you're playing three deep, but the bar goes way down to the left side.
Yeah, it was like, kind of a strange place to play.
Yeah.
The only thing that was cool was I was near the bartender and he would slide me drinks.
Like, yeah, there you go. Anytime you get a little too heated up, here comes another one, man. The bartenders are great. Yeah,
remember
the
Gabriel?
Yeah, that guy
was cool.
He was a cool dude. He passed away a couple of years back, but he was great. He was old school. He'd been there he started as a busboy there.
Yeah, he was a great guy to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those guys had some character, that's for sure. It was a place that was renowned for that, and a lot of people just showed up for that.
I was happy to be a part of that history at the end, before the pandemic.
Yeah.
It was cool to be a part of that history.
Yeah, it's a cool bar. It's still a very cool bar. And again, I think Mark's got it shaped up and it's doing some very, very good things.
Let's make it happen, Captain.
Exactly, man. And so we did you ever play there's more jam night bars too, like Jax was, although Jax I think was a legitimate kind of bluesy jazz club, right?
I don't think Jax is there anymore.
No, they closed down.
There's a place called Kulak's Woodshed, which is kind of cool, that has a recording studio in there. It's like you're on a movie set or a TV show set.
Yeah, yeah, they shoot you and record you as you do your.
Have I think you been
they
there?
No, I have a buddy that plays out there.
I've yet to go there, but hope to visit there soon.
Yeah, he likes it. He likes it a lot. He told me about the experience some years ago. He was an actor friend of mine. I'd worked with him, and he's like, "Hey, John, you're still playing out in your band?" I go, "Yeah." And he told me the whole thing. He goes, "Yeah, you get kind of a free music video out of it. The sound's great." So it's tough to book your band though in there for three songs.
Yeah, I don't think my guys would want to do that for
that. I don't think that one's going to happen, at least this week.
I can't even justify that with my better half to go play three songs somewhere.
Exactly. Hey, I'm going out. I'll be back in an hour and a half, though.
Yeah. Anyway.
So I think I want to show a little vibe there's a song you sent over called Coin Op Blues.
Oh, yeah.
I'm gonna put that one on, and then we'll get back and talk some more, brother.
It was one of my first productions where I had a horn section.
Yeah. I think that it's definitely got a nice funky vibe and some very clever vocals, I think.
Check it.
We're going to hit it right now. Like I said, man, that's got some, it's kind of a funky, jazzy thing a little bit. And then the whole vocal arrangement's very clever and the lyrics are very clever. Did you write that song?
Coin Op Blues, I wrote that one and the lyrics too on that. And I believe Tolan sang on that, right?
Interesting. And so what do you teach Michael how to sing the song and he just runs with it, or you give him latitude and say it's kind of like this?
Some of them, yes, I would sing it for him. And he, well, I have lead sheets of the melody too, but he, you know, some, he goes, how does it go? And so I would sing it and then he would just get it. He's so good. He's a way better singer than I am.
Yeah, he's a very talented fellow. There's no doubt.
Sometimes we harmonize together, and I found that our two voices together kind of sounded pretty cool, you know, like kind of like Fagan and Mike McDonald a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm not the best singer.
Is it weird for you when you write a song and then you could try to play all the instruments, right? But like, so when with Tolan, for example, if he played some of the guitar on some of your stuff, which I believe he did, is it weird sometimes when you're like, hey, this is what I want, and then is it that thing where it's like, damn, that's better than I thought, or you know, that's not quite what I'm thinking? Is there a struggle with that part of it?
Not at all, because I'm not a bass player or a guitar player, and Tolan played bass too on some of that.
Interesting.
And so once again, he just needs to know the chords. And you know, if you're working with good cats, they just come out with really good parts, way better than right. I can do it. You know, I handle mostly the drums and the vibraphone or some of the piano parts I would play. And then a lot of the percussion parts I would play too. And then Tolan did guitar and bass. Sometimes some guys from Catatonic would come in and play some of the other parts, you know, like winds, which I don't really do winds.
Right.
As far as on that level, you know.
Yeah, I think that's what I always find too. It's like, I can kind of do it, but why not let a guy who can really take the ride do it?
Exactly. You know, yeah. Let them come up with the part. Let them, you know, do the, I try, like I said before, I try not to have a note for note bass part or a note for note right. guitar part, you know. Come up with something cool, you know. Sometimes I'll write a bass line and say, start off this way, and then, you know, do your own thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't really hang on to it. You learned out through the years of doing it. It's just better to, because I guess that is jazz. That's the core of jazz, right?
You got
to
let your guys do their own thing. That's what Miles was good at. He would just hire good cats, and he wouldn't have to say, play this. He would just give them a lead sheet like we do and let them create their own part.
And so do you get, I assume that the answer to this is yes, but this is more for the audience. So do you get so good at looking at these sheets and understanding these sheets that you could technically probably play a song just handed the sheets?
Pretty much. When you come to our rehearsal, I'll pass out the lead sheet. Maybe by the second or third time, you know, it could be recordable.
Right. That's fantastic, man.
Miles always thought the first take was the best one, you know?
Yeah. I think there's something to like the energy of something the first couple times. Like then you start to master it and start to hone it. And then it just feels a little too pat, a little too practiced.
You know, for some of our music that, which I'd like to say kind of requires some rehearsing because they have multiple sections and, you know, sometimes fast melodies and things like that. You know, it might be tough to sight read for some people. So, you know, it requires a little more rehearsing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a firm believer in, you know, a little repetition sometimes is good because then the music starts to evolve and it goes to different places. And, you know, we used to rehearse once a week and then we back to twice a month. And, you know, sometimes I miss the once a week because, like I said, the music starts to evolve.
Yeah.
The more you play it, it goes to a better place. I don't think you get bored with our music because it's so complex.
It is.
And it has room to grow, like, you know. So I think the more you play it, the better it gets, like.
I can see what you're saying. I mean, I think that's what my wife and I were very impressed with, was the depth of your music. And again, I term it as there's drama in it. There's definitely changes, and they're not changes just to show how clever you guys are as jazz players. It feels right for the music, to at least my wife and I did. And it does seem that what you're saying makes sense, that doing it more than once is best, because then you get to ingest what the other players are doing and then kind of shape it to that too, I think, is what one of your points would be.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something to say for a little repetition.
Yeah. Because there's you know, one of the players doing something, you're going, damn, I never would have thought about that. This gives me a cool opportunity to do this. So it's breathing collectively in a way.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So what do you got coming up, man? Unfortunately, I missed the last show there at the Baked Potato.
Yeah, our next performance there is January 7th. It's on a Sunday night. So hopefully
I'll be there this time.
Some of your listeners will come and check it out. Check out Catatonic.
Absolutely. And where can they find you online?
We have a YouTube channel, Catatonic LA. And, you know, we have Facebook.
Right.
That.
I usually track you via Facebook, and that does tend to be the easiest way to see what's going on with you guys. I think it's an amazing jazz outfit. I think they used to call jazz guys. It's an amazing outfit.
That's old school, John.
Yeah, man. I know, man. I was going full out on you, baby. Well worth seeing. I recommend it. You might bump into me because oftentimes I'm going to be showing up at those shows. And
anytime I get to hang out with John Renaud, that's just a great thing.
Life is a great adventure at that point, man. I'm the second most boring guy on the planet, basically.
Not at all, people. Not at all.
Hey, thank you so much for coming on and talking about your experiences as a jazz guy. And it's very cool talking with you. Hopefully we get a chance to do it again.
Well, thanks for having me. And it's an honor to share some of my thoughts and little history on myself. Thank you.
You bet, man. I'm looking forward to posting it for the folks.
Okay, John. Have a good one.
All right, brother.